Back in that day, before tape was discovered, or in how to use recording tape, this is how you recorded programs. You put them on vinyl.
On this episode of Radio Survivor, Jennifer and Paul take a tour of a high school radio station that's been on the air since 1923.
The other stations that lay claim to being the oldest high school radio station started in the 1940s. So,
to find this group of transcriptions that we just found here at the radio station a couple of months ago is really, really remarkable.
And Matthew Lassar tells us why community radio will matter more 20 years in the future.
Neither of them has anything to do with digital media or marketing.
My name is Eric Klein. Paul Riesmandel isn't here with me. Physically, he is, of course, here in spirit. He helped me produce this episode of the program. Up first, we are going to jump straight in to College Radio Watch, where Jennifer and Paul take a tour of what is probably the longest operating, oldest high school radio station in the United States. Up next, we have College Radio Watch with Jennifer Waits, and I'm joined live by Jennifer over Skype.
It's very exciting. It's our first College Radio Watch together.
Hooray. And you were just here in Portland, and you went to CMJ, and we heard a little bit about it on last week's episode, but you did a more detailed write-up. So what's new?
Yeah. So I just wanted to point out that I posted something on Radio Survivor recapping the conference with a few pictures and some of my thoughts about how the day went. And overall, I thought it was a really great opportunity for people from other stations to get together and meet folks from the region. It was mostly people from radio stations in Oregon and Washington.
The Pacific Northwest, as we call it.
Yes, the Pacific Northwest. As well as me from California and somebody from Canada. So I think there were around 16 radio stations there. So you can see my fuller report on radiosurvivor.com.
Yeah, and that's CMJ is a, they used to be the College Media Journal, and now they're CMJ. And so that was mostly a college conference, but then other community stations were invited into the mix, which I think is a nice lowering of barriers.
Yeah, and they're also community radio stations who report to CMJ, because CMJ does charting mainly for college radio, but there are stations that report their airplay to CMJ who aren't college stations. So some of those folks were there, and community stations that I saw there were X-Ray FM from Portland and KBOO from Portland. And then some hybrid stations who are on college campuses, but also have a large number of community DJs like Chaos, K-A-O-S, at Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington.
Evergreen State College.
The Evergreen State College.
Just like the mighty Calex. Yeah.
And it is. Wow, it's a beautiful campus.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, and so people can check out those photographs and more of... You had time to reflect on your trip as opposed to the last segment when you were pretty much hot off the conference and sat down in front of microphones with Paul.
I know. Yeah, Paul and I literally recorded that the night of the conference. And I just listened to it and we sound like we're chipper, but I know we were actually quite exhausted at the time.
Great. And well, but the real thing we're talking about now, Jennifer, because you were here in Portland, is you had an opportunity to visit one of the weirdest stations that you're a giant fan of. And I'm so excited to talk to you about it.
Yeah. So we're talking about this in our College Radio Watch segment, but we're going to talk about a high school radio station. And
it fits. I swear it fits.
It does fit. And I feel like I was just telling somebody this weekend that I started writing and reporting on college radio because I found that not many people report on the culture of college radio. And everything I say about college radio is amplified, 100 million times when you think about high school radio.
Yes, yeah, because how many high school radio stations are there?
More than you would think. I don't have a number, but it's more than you would think. And one of those stations, KBPS, is in Portland, Oregon. So when I realized I would be in Portland for CMJ, I reached out to KBPS's operations manager, Kevin Flink, to see if I could visit on a Sunday morning, which he was very, very nicely agreed. I was not expecting that. But I'd written about the station this summer because I had done some digging into its history, and I'm just fascinated by the place. I'm pretty sure that it's the oldest high school radio station in the United States. It started in 1923.
Yeah, that's gotta be close.
Yeah, the other stations that lay claim to being the oldest high school radio station started in the 1940s. So, so the one at Benson is definitely older than that. And it's pretty incredible to me that a station under the same owner has been around for so long. And it's an AM station, as you would imagine, since it started in 1923. And it's at Benson Polytechnic High School. The license is owned by the Portland Public Schools. And over the years, they've had participation from students at a number of different schools throughout the district, including elementary schools. But now it seems like it's pretty much just Benson students who operate the radio station. So Paul joined me and we met up with Kevin on a Sunday morning on a lovely fall morning in Portland with beautiful fall foliage just outside the door. And the station has this amazing entrance with its call letters over the station door. And I always love that when you walk up to a place and you could tell that it's a radio station. And then around the back of the building, we got to see the tower, which is also exciting. It's not that often that I get to see the radio tower for a radio station, but it was right there. And so we wandered through. There weren't any students there on the weekend, but we got to have the grand tour. Some of my favorite things were, as part of the radio classes, students create these poster presentations about radio history. So there were these amazing kind of collages about luminaries from college radio or from radio history. So I thought that was super fun. And then we got to see all of the studios and various pieces of equipment, some old pictures. And then Kevin dug up these vintage transcription discs, which I don't know if you're aware, but they're these oversized records that used to be used to record radio shows back before tape. So he had recently found a stack of these transcription discs that captured some of the old programming dating back to the 1940s from the high school radio station.
Wow. I want to hear it.
I know. So it's amazing. I don't even think he has the tools to play them. It was amazing to see a lot of them look like children's stories that had probably been performed by students. On some of them, it looked like it was middle school age students on the recordings. And yeah, the oldest one we saw was from the mid to late 1940s. So that was a super cool find. And towards the end, he also brought out some vintage photos of the station. So I was in heaven. I really love radio history. And Paul had to kind of drag me out of there because we had another station to go to. This is always the case when somebody is with me. It's like, okay, we got to keep going. But I could have spent hours there.
My name is Kevin Flink. I'm the operations manager of KBPS AM. We're owned and operated by the Portland Public School District in Portland, Oregon. I've been associated with the radio station in one position or another going back to December of 1968. So I've seen a lot of things happen during my time here.
And so I feel like this is probably the oldest high school radio station in the country. Can you tell me a bit about the history?
Some high school students walked by a store in downtown Portland called Stubbs Electric, and they had a sign in the radio station window that said, "Radio station for sale." I think it was $1,700, which was quite a piece of money back in 1922, probably. And so they came back and asked the principal if there was any way they could get student body funds to purchase this radio station and bring it over to Benson High School, where the science teachers and other teachers could help them put this radio station on the air. And a very well-thinking principal said, sure, absolutely, what a great idea this would be. So with student body funds, the station was bought. Its original call letters were KFIF, brought it over to Benson High School, Benson Polytechnic High School in Portland. We went on the air in March of 1923. So if you're going to be a high school radio station that's been on the air longer than that, I would love to hear where you're from and what your story is.
So we were just digging through this incredible pile of transcription discs. Can you explain what a transcription disc is and what they are? What's on them, do you think?
Well, transcription discs are made of what we call vinyl now when you're thinking of long-playing records or LPs. And these are even bigger. I'd say they're close to 18 inches around instead of the size of what you think of a normal LP is today. And 15 to 30-minute programs could be recorded depending on what speed you were using to record the programs on. I believe the ones we were looking at pretty much were all at 33, which is the standard rotation speed of even LPs today. And but back in that day, before tape was discovered and how to use recording tape, this is how you recorded programs. You put them on vinyl. And so to find this group of transcriptions that we just found here at the radio station a couple of months ago is really, really remarkable. And the dates go back into the mid-40s for some of these programs. So it's been a real gold mine, and we're going to hang on to them with both arms wrapped around them.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me because you've had elementary school students. So since it's a district-owned station, you know, currently I guess it's high school-oriented, but in the past you had elementary school students, and we saw that on the transcription disc, that there were some eighth graders who were involved with stories, like there was Jack and the Beanstalk.
Well, we would have grade school children come in often and do stories on the air where they would act out different speaking roles and that sort of thing, sort of to tell these kids or show these kids what radio station was like. Pretty much the only thing that survived that a lot of people know about now was perhaps Orson Welles and the CBS Mystery Theater with his Halloween story of the Martians actually invading the U.S. And that's what we think of when we think of radio back in the 30s and 40s. But we were giving these examples. We had teachers in the district who would write scripts of different stories or revise fairy tales like Jack and the Beanstalk. And we would have down to third grade level students come in and actually record them. We'd put them on the air so parents and grandparents could listen or the other kids back at school. And so this was a large part of our programming into the 70s here at the radio station.
So yeah, it was really fun. It's always fun to meet somebody else who's super passionate about radio. The interesting thing about Kevin is that he started at the station when he was a student. He said probably in the fall of 1969, he started there. And he went to a nearby high school and graduated in 1971. And then he came back later to work at the station. And now he's the operations manager. And he's actually retired, but he's working part-time as an operations manager there. And it seems like there have been a lot of people over the years who have been there for big chunks of time. Back in June, when I wrote about the history of the station for Radio Survivor, a lot of it was based on a dissertation that I'd read that was written by another former advisor who had been in the station, who had been at the station from the 1940s through the 1990s. And so she wrote about, in her dissertation, she wrote about the very early years of the station. So it's been cool to see that they've had these longtime adult advisors at the station who have been able to kind of keep things running and right. capture the history.
High school radio is sort of under the radar for most people. What's your sense of what high school radio, what's the benefit of high school radio? Why do you think it's important?
No matter what line of work you get into, you're going to have to use communication skills. If you're dealing with the public, if you're in retail, if you're in research and development, whatever line of work you wind up getting into, you have to demonstrate communication skills. What we do here is we use the radio station as the hook for students to improve their radio skills, be it use of grammar in the language and speaking over the air, writing what you're going to say. So you get writing experience, you get speaking experience and stuff that even if you're not headed towards a career in communications, you're going to be able to use in your future. And if you are headed in the communications area, what this does is it gives you a head start over students who maybe discover communications or media or radio or even journalism at the college level. Our kids have had that experience. They've been doing it as a major here at Benson High School for at least 2 years.
Yeah, it's an interesting high school because it's a polytechnic high school. So can you describe maybe a few of the other types of majors? Like what's the environment like at the school?
Every student at Benson has to major in a topic. I know I'm going to leave some out because I think there are like 17 different majors here at Benson, and there used to be many more, but because of funding cutbacks, we've had to shrink a little bit. What you do is your freshman year and your sophomore year, you go around to various what we call shops and experiment on a 9-week basis. Is this something I would like to do? So you have an opportunity to visit 8 different shops your freshman and sophomore year, and they can range from health occupations to and in health occupations, they split that down into medical and dental. We have building construction where as a junior and senior, you go out and actually build a house and then sell it and use the proceeds from that sale to further the next house that's built. We have automotive. Even if you're going to use it on your own, you could learn how to change your own oil, change your spark plug, save yourself some money there. And that's a field that they're always looking for mechanics. We have manufacturing here where you can learn to use metal to build things. Manufacturing is still an industry that has many openings. A lot of people that are in the manufacturing area are either at or very close to retirement age. A lot of job openings in that area. We also have college prep. I mean, our students take high levels of math and science here, which helps them too. So we're not strictly a shop high school or what we now call CTE high school, but we give you an opportunity to find where you'd like to go, what you would like to concentrate on. And, you know, this includes communications and media too, be it digital media, which is more of what we used to call video, audio media, which is KBPS, and radio broadcasting, which is also one of the majors that we have.
What does CTE stand for?
Career Technical Education. Boy, pulled that one right out, huh? Yeah. It's also been called Vocational Education. It's had a lot of different names over the years, but Career Technical Education, because we're looking for people who are interested in doing this for a career.
No, it's too bad you didn't ask him about his experiences at the station when he was a student.
Yeah, that would have been really interesting. You know, next time.
Next time. Yeah, well, I live in Portland. I can track him down if I need to.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, and I would like to go back. You know, I was there on the weekend, so the next time in Portland, I would like to go back on a weekday and meet some of the students and see what it's like during the school year.
Yeah.
They have, at the station, they actually have classrooms that are for the students to use, and they include production rooms. And it's all segmented. I think he showed us the room for the sophomores, and you know, maybe a room for the juniors and seniors. So as you progress through the program, you get more access to different things at the station.
Right.
How much, what's your power right now?
We are a 1000 watt radio station located at 1450 on the AM dial. in the Portland, greater Portland area. And since we're owned and operated by the Portland School District, their concern is our signal reaches the Portland School District. So if you live – I have personally picked up the station as far north as Kelso, Washington, and as far south as probably Newburgh or so. We're also available on the TuneIn app, not that I'm trying to advertise. And we're also available online at kbps.am. So wherever you live, you can just fire up your computer and go to kbps.am and listen to us as well.
And when can people most expect to actually hear the students?
Students are on the air from around 10 o'clock to 11:30 in the morning and noon to 1:30 in the afternoons, because we follow their student schedule, and that's Monday through Friday during the school year. And then during the summer, we're on from 9 to 1 doing a program geared towards young people called Summer Sound.
And the rest of the time?
Rest of the time, automation takes over. We have a great library of over 4,000 titles that we play, and we get a lot of response from people, some older than I am, that say, wow, I haven't heard that in a long time. So we play some older music. I'd say we're quasi album oriented from 6 p.m. in the evening until 6 a.m. on the following morning, and then all day on Saturday and Sunday. But it gets quite a response as well.
Great.
How many students are involved?
Let me see. Right now we have about 25 sophomores and we have about 40 juniors and seniors combined. So about 65 right at the current time. And that sophomore number will change every 9 weeks and we'll get a new 25 to 30 in.
I really enjoyed the part where, I mean, one of the themes that you've been thumping here on College Radio Watch during the weeks that we've been making this podcast together is that everyone needs to know, and it needs to be remembered, the special things that a college radio station education endows to the people that are lucky enough to participate in such a thing. And there's no reason why people who are a little bit younger shouldn't enjoy those same benefits. So it's kind of amazing that there are high school students that get to have their college radio experience years and years in advance.
It's true, and I think a lot of people underestimate teenagers and kids in general.
Right.
You know, I actually had my 9-year-old daughter on my radio show with me this week, and she was reading public service announcements, and people were saying, wow, she sounds like she's totally ready for DJ training.
Well, I just launched a podcast with my 9-year-old son, and it's been a dream of mine to sit down with him in front of a microphone and talk to him for a really long time. And we've done that many, many times. But all of a sudden, he is ready. He knows what he's going to say, and it's coming out of him. And I don't have to prompt him very much. He's ready to podcast, and meanwhile he's got his notebook open and he's taking notes during the interview about like the answers to the questions he's asking me. Let alone he has his notes planning in advance the outline for his story. So I'm just over the moon.
Wow.
With student broadcasting, including people I happen to be related to. So
that's amazing.
It's really nice. And more.
Well, there are radio stations in elementary schools and podcasts at elementary schools. So, you know, every time I run across information about them, I try to at least tweet about it, if nothing else. But I think it's incredible when elementary schools are introducing kids to audio production and radio shows.
Yeah, I just decided I'm going to start one for his school. Why shouldn't I? Oh my gosh, he goes to such a great school that the whole community can enjoy it.
That's amazing. I hope we hear more about that in future.
This is why I love this podcast, because I feel inspired whenever I get a chance to produce it. Well, Jennifer, thanks so much for joining us today. I had a good time.
Thank you so much.
I had a lot of fun with Jennifer, getting to kind of tag along with her. Her love for touring radio stations is infectious. And it's not as if I don't enjoy it. For whatever reason, I don't go out of my way. I don't have the same sort of verve for it that she does.
I know. We live in Portland, Paul. I know. And I have not yet visited the Benson High School radio station.
And I lived in Chicago and visited like one other station during the entire time I was there. But she makes it a priority. She really goes out of her way. And the enthusiasm is great. And at KBPS, it was so great to see how excited our host was. Because it's nice when someone takes an interest in what you do and validates it. And he clearly does it out of love for the medium and love for sharing that with the students. You know, sure, it's a job, but it's not a full-time job. He does it because he loves it, because it's something meaningful to him. And it's meaningful to share and share with the Portland community and share with their online listenership and to kind of be around that and be, you know, I ask questions, of course, but to be a little bit of a fly on the wall sort of was absolutely fantastic. Plus, the station's really cool and the history is fantastic. And hanging out with another radio nerd around radio equipment and the gear and stuff is always fun too in that way. And so I'm so glad that Jennifer was willing to have me along and let me play tech and let me be her recordist for part of it and take pictures and Instagram it for much of the time. And I was also grateful to have Jennifer take the lead.
What's our Instagram account?
Our Instagram is radio.survivor.
Thank you to Jeffrey Simmons.
Thanks, Jeffrey Simmons, for getting us on the Instagram train. But yeah, and it was great to sort of be the fly on the wall, too, to not have to be the one sort of leading the tour, really engaging and to kind of watching whatever and looking around. So it was absolutely a ton of fun. And let me just say to folks, if you're into radio, you know, I think college stations, community stations, high school stations are all into engaging with people. And I know that when I was advising WNUR at Northwestern University, Cub Scout troops, Girl Scout troops, Boys and Girls Club groups, school tours and all this, the students love taking them around. And, you know, and so not always, you know, are people up for, you know, giving every person who walks into our tour just because it's time and effort.
You have to schedule it first. Yeah. Don't just show up.
But if you have a reason, if you do a blog or you do a podcast or, you know, you can kind of help the station in your own way, right? I think it's a fantastic thing.
If you would like to visit a station outside of Jennifer's neighborhoods and our own, we would love to have you contribute something to Radio Survivor. You can email us at editors@radiosurvivor.com.
Yeah, the more the merrier.
Up next on the program, we have Lassar's Letter on Radio with Matthew Lassar.
This is Matthew Lassar for the Radio Survivor podcast, and I'm reading radio info of Sydney, Australia. That's a radio website in Sydney. And it has some coverage of that country's community broadcasting conference. And it looks like an interesting event. One of the panels considered what community broadcasting in 2035 will look and sound like. That's 20 years from now, and that's an interesting thing to think about. I can't say I'm wowed by the excerpted comments from a particular panel which looked at the state of DAB Plus and used the word curation a lot. I'll bet you that I'm not the only person who hopes that we come up with some other word besides curation by the year 2035. A lot of words like localism and brand got thrown around, it seems. I'm not a futurologist, but here are two reasons why I think community radio is going to matter 20 years from now. Neither of them has anything to do with digital media or marketing. First, community media, and especially community radio, are going to matter because of global warming. By 2035, one of Greenland's principal glaciers, at least one of them, will have substantially broken up, raising the sea level significantly. And this is only one example of how climate change is going to impact everything. As superstorms and droughts and floods proliferate, locally based electronic media centers like community radio stations are going to become critical to helping people navigate their way through these emergencies. Second, FM and AM broadcasting will become increasingly useful to populations trying to end-run state corporate digital censorship, We've already seen examples of digital shutdowns in various regions of India and elsewhere. Basically, you have telecoms cooperating with governments closing off internet access during what regional or national administrations deem social emergencies. And during those times, good old school AM, FM should come in handy for allowing the targets of this kind of censorship to renew discussion. And maybe they'll even bring back various kinds of digital communication using FM for digital transmissions of information, especially texting. There's a whole lot of AM, FM experimentation with using that medium for texting at this point. These are, to my mind, the real bottom line reasons why community radio is going to be important 20 years from now. Probably it'll be important for those reasons much sooner. This is Matthew Lessar for the Radio Survivor podcast.
Well, that's it for this episode of Radio Survivor. Of course, if you have been a regular listener, you might have noticed that this is a special, shorter version because Paul and I are not together. We did, in fact, get together and record the episode as we usually do. And because of, well, it's something I did. It's my the reason why Paul and I are not now having a conversation about the show is, well, it will all be clear later. I think we'll talk about it next time or eventually. But meanwhile, go check out the website, radiosurvivor.com. If you are a fan of our work, you really should consider helping us keeping it going, helping us grow, helping us sustain. Some of us are getting quite busy, and it would be nice if we could turn down work so that we could put more of our energy into Radio Survivor. That isn't going to happen yet, because the paying work is going to take supremacy some days over the passion work of Radio Survivor. You can remedy that if you would like to by donating to the Radio Survivor Patreon campaign. You can also send us your feedback, record it in a voicemail app, or send us an old-fashioned email, editors@radiosurvivor.com. And those editors, of course, are Matthew Lessar, Paul Riesmandel, Jennifer Waits, and myself. They let me join the team because of the radio program that I helped them produce. I plan on earning my keep with a few blog entries in soon. I gotta make time to blog. It's a real job, a labor of love to write a blog post, and I have one in the hopper, which would also, when I get it done, explain why this week's episode is so strange. But hey, enough of that. Thank you so much for listening, and do subscribe to us on iTunes and rate us and review us, our work. It would be amazing to have more people find out about what we're up to, and it's going to take the collective of listeners that we currently have to spread the word. So step up and do that if you would like to. I would like you to do it. Hey, thank you so much for listening. Have a good week.